You are listening to the Myth TV Cast. Welcome to another exciting episode of the Myth TV Cast. My name is Pat Davila. Not with me is Dan Fry. He was a little preoccupied, so I'm going to be flying solo tonight. With me, though, is Jeremy Hammer, who's the VP of Systems Integration at Seton Corp. Jeremy, welcome to the show.
Hi, Pat. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for coming on. You guys have come out with a cable card PCI card, correct? That you basically get a cable card from your cable provider, and you'll be able to tune four streams at the same time, correct?
That's right. It's called the Infinity V4. It does cable card decryption, so you can get all the premium content on from your cable company, including HBO and Stars and those kinds of things, all in HD, and they'll do four channels at the same time.
Now, when we talk about cable card systems, for the longest time, they were not available in Linux. And part of the issue, from my understanding, was that the content providers didn't want to provide, DRM keys directly to end users so that, the idea would be that they'd be able to crack or pack into their streams illegally or whatnot. What exactly has changed that is going to make cable card available on Linux systems?
Right. So previously, I'm sure as most of the Myth TV users know, most of the content on cable television is encrypted. And so you can't have it without having something to decrypt that content, which really that stems back to basically Hollywood, where Hollywood has legal contracts with content providers such as HBO, who has legal contracts with cable companies like Comcast, and all of those contracts require that they put in preventative measures to make sure that things aren't stolen and pirated and so forth. And so basically what it is there's different levels of copy protection that can be on your cable channels. And so previously with PC tuners that had cable cards, the specification required that with a cable card in, regardless of the channel that was being released to the user software, it had to have a DRM pairing, which means it didn't necessarily have to be encrypted. It just had to be authenticated to say that the host was, an acceptable host to receive the content. And to be perfectly honest, I think it was kind of something that when they wrote the specs, they just kind of missed when they wrote them originally. Where it was the specific wording that prevented you from being able to release content without a DRM pairing, and even if the content didn't need to be decrypted. And so recently, with various lobbying efforts within cable labs by us and other companies, the spec has been changed to be able to release copy freely content to host software without having that DRM pairing. And so for Myth TV, what this means is that all the channels on cable that are encrypted on the wire, which what I mean by that is you can't receive them via a ClearQuam tuner.
Right, for ClearQuam tuners, you're able to get anything that's unencrypted, that's open and free. So, for instance, right. I have an HD Home Run as one of my tuners on my MIT system. My cable provider, RCN, leaves open basically the network stations, the CBS, NBC,
right.
ABC, PBS,
NBC, yeah, those kind of
CW.
Things.
They leave those unencrypted, so I'm able to record off of those.
Right. So there are channels on cable that are encrypted on the wire, so you can't receive them with a clear quantum tuner. But once they've gone through a cable card, they're marked as a copy protection level of copy freely, which means that they do not have to be encrypted coming out of our tuner device. And those channels are the ones that no longer have to have a DRM pairing to be released, and they're not encrypted when they are released from our tuner. And so these flags are up to your particular cable provider and somewhat up to the legal contracts that they have with the content providers. And so depending on where you are, the channels that you can get may be different. So I know for a fact that Comcast has all the channels except for the high value, like movie channels, like HBO and stuff.
Cinemax and whatnot, Showtime.
Those kinds of things. Everything else is copy freely. So you'd be able to get, if you're on Comcast and Myth TV, you'd be able to get ESPN HD, Food Network HD, Sci-Fi HD, Discovery Channel, all those in Myth TV with the cable card.
Now, previously, the only computer system that you were able to do recording with the old setup was, I believe, Windows Media Center was the only one. Even if you were running other PVR software in Windows that was non-Media Center, such as maybe Sage TV or one of the other ones, you were not able to use cable cards, correct?
That's correct. And the reason, again, comes back to the DRM. Cable Labs and everyone is open to any company implementing a host software to be able to receive protected content, but they have to, you know, abide by the DRM rules. And so far, Microsoft is the only one that's stepped up and actually done it.
What about TiVo? I know the new TiVo box that they sell is it's a dual tuner cable card system, I believe.
Right, and so TiVo is a little bit of a different category than a PC tuner card. Obviously, things on a PC are a little more open and susceptible to people doing whatever they want, whereas a TiVo is a closed system that has, you know, preventative measures for people being able to try and get into them.
Gotcha. So let me ask you about your company, Seton Corp. Is this like the first product that you guys in this field, or have you done other products similar or different?
This is our first product for consumers. We have some commercial products that are used in hotels, but this is our first consumer product.
And where are you guys based? You're on the West Coast, right, of U.S.?
Yeah, we're in Kirkland, Washington, which is basically right in between Redmond, where Microsoft is, and Seattle.
Gotcha.
So it's kind of on the outskirts of Seattle.
Now, the card that you're selling is how much is it retailing for?
It's $400, so it is about $100. It works out to be $100 per tuner, which compared to the previous cable card tuners from AMD, or before that ATI, before they were bought by AMD, which were about, when they originally came out, were like $350 or $300 per tuner, and it was a single tuner. And so we've come down. You know, the price has come down drastically since the original Ochre tuner came out. And I'm sure as time goes on, things will only get better and better.
Now, the old cable card systems, they basically required a single cable card for each tuner, right? So if you had a dual tuner, you would have to get two different cable cards and pay whatever the fee was from the cable provider for the two tuners. Whereas your system is basically you get one cable card and you're able to record four different channels basically at the same time.
Yeah, that's correct. So the previous ones, they only had one tuner on the device. And so you could only record one thing per device. So if you wanted more tuners to do DVR functions, you had to get multiple of the ATI tuners, plus you had to rent multiple cable cards for each device. And so cable cards are typically between $2 and $7 per month to rent a cable card. And so having one cable card for four tuners, you know, reduces your monthly bill quite a bit versus having four of them. Also, I know that some cable companies specifically I know Comcast, your first cable card is free, and you only have to rent additional cable cards after that. So with the Infinity TV, when you have four tuners with one cable card, you actually don't even have to pay a monthly bill for the cable card. You still have, you know, to buy your TV service, but not, there's no equipment rental fees.
Right. So I guess basically, you know, you have a relationship with the different content providers. They have a relationship with the content producers. So, I guess the content producers don't want people pirating their stuff. Content providers are people, normal right. people, you know, recording it illegal and distributing it, basically. So it's you guys are walking a fine line. It's pretty tricky, right?
Well, we have to abide by the flags that are set by the cable company on the channel. So, we have to get our device certified by Cable Labs in order to be able to use Cable Card and sell a consumer product. So we have to enforce all of the encryption rules. And so, like I said, it's really up to the cable company what those flags will be set like in your area. And I described Comcast earlier, but in contrast to that, Time Warner Cable typically encrypts and sets the copy protection flags to copy once, which requires encryption on almost all channels. So if your cable company is Time Warner, then this may not be, you know, a very useful event for you.
So basically, it's going to vary depending upon who your provider is and what their level of DRM right. on their channels. So I guess the best right. thing to do is, you know, find out, you know, from different people, you know, who's encrypted and whatnot. On your website, do you have any of this information freely available as far as the different cable providers and what they encrypt?
We do not. Unfortunately, it's not really open information. We'd have to, I guess we could go contact all the cable companies across the United States and figure out what the rules are.
Yeah, I know there is a website called DSL Reports, which is a site that a lot of cable end users go to, and they report about the different cable systems and the different locations and, you know, what's going on with that. Mm-hmm. I recommend people go there. And I actually looked on there as far as RSTN, which is my provider, and it sounds like the only ones that are really encrypted really tightly are the premium channels. So that's encouraging for me, you know, for people that are in Time Warner area, it's not very encouraging, so it's going to vary. Now you talked about the company that does the cable card encryption. How did they get into this? You know, how they get into this particular power to deal with the different cable companies and the companies making cable card tuners? How is that in place? Do you know the history?
I'm sorry. Who's
are you talking about? You mentioned the company that does the certification for the cable cards, and the
Cable Labs.
Cable Labs, yeah.
Cable Labs is they're an organization that's really I'm not sure their exact term. They're a nonprofit organization that's put together by the basically all the cable companies. Together to write standards and specifications and govern, enforcement of the rules and certification. And so what they do is they write the cable modem specifications, the cable card specifications, and third-party device specifications. So and so that all of this, all of these devices can be used across the country and they will work everywhere. So, you know, if there wasn't some central organization to maintain the specs, then you could go to New York and some device would work. But then when you take it to LA, it wouldn't work because they didn't coordinate to make sure that all the equipment worked together. And so really this Cable Labs is kind of the governing body of the specifications.
So, the way you describe it, it sounds like it's a consortium where each cable company has a hand in it. So that whatever they sit on a board or whatever, and they mm-hmm. partake and have their people involved in it.
Right, right.
Gotcha. So it's an industry
right.
thing.
And then they also right, and they may also have to abide by FCC rules and things like that. So it's really more of a centralized place to make sure everyone is working together, which is great for us, because if that weren't the case, then we wouldn't, as a third party, you know, be able to make a device that we can sell all across the U.S. and have it work everywhere.
Yeah, I know for the longest time, you know, as a Linux, I've been a Linux user now almost 10 years, and actually it's been more than 10 years I'm a Linux user, and I've been running Myth TV on and off probably for about 8 years or so, 7-8 years. It's been a while, and longest time everybody was talking about cable card being able to use it, being able to run it, and basically the community, and it was like, you know, what the community said was that cable cards never come into Linux, you know, accept that and move on. And that's been the attitude so far, you know. it's kind of sad.
Yeah, no, I understand. Well, what ended up happening here actually was I started talking to some Myth, I believe they were, it was Mythbuntu maintainers about over a year ago. And so at that point, we started talking about the possibility of how we could get cable card into Myth. And we came up with being able to do non-copy once content in Myth TV. And so over a year ago, I started the lobbying Cable Labs to get this changed. And it kind of slowed down for a bit because at the time, we, Seton, hadn't released our product yet, so there wasn't a big hurry for us to do it. And the only one that existed at the time was the ATI device. And ATI had pretty much gotten out of the market. They weren't releasing any updates, and so they weren't gonna change that. So until we had our product come out on the market, there wasn't a big push to get the spec changed. But the lobbying actually started over a year ago within Cable Labs IS. So
now, what does that involve? Just having somebody go to the committee and try to get them to open standards? Is it involve lawyers? What exactly was
it involves? It involves, doing, suggesting the changes, getting approvals by the cable companies. Cable Labs maintains the specs, and the Cable Labs is a consortium of the cable companies, so you have to make sure that the spec changes won't break any of the legal contracts that some of the cable companies may have. So you have to get approval for it, and then you have to go through spec change approval and eventually get the spec changed.
So who's involved? Is it engineers? Is it legal people? Is it just people from different electronics companies? Who are the people that go in apply and make changes?
Any member of Cable Labs can make changes and suggest changes. And any company can become a member of Cable Labs. There's agreements you have to sign, and I think you have to pay them some money to become a member of Cable Labs, but anyone can do it.
Well, it's great that they've, you know, seen the light and they can open it up a little bit, so that's a great thing. Now, let me ask you, getting back to support of Linux and drivers in Myth TV, you said you've talked to some of the Mythbuntu people. Have you talked to anybody, you know, the upstream developers for Myth TV at all? Or even some of the kernel developers?
Yeah, I've actually sent one of our cards a while ago, actually, to some of the Myth TV developer, and he's working on integrating the interface into Myth TV. So the development effort is currently in progress.
Now, what about kernel upstream, getting the actual driver into the kernel, the Linux kernel?
That is currently not done. Although we could do it, the driver is freely available. We will be giving it out. We maintain the driver. We've been using Linux for years and years now. Most of the people at Seton actually use Linux as our daily environment that we work in and use on our home computers even. So we're a bunch of Linux users. So
that's great.
But we definitely support Linux, and when the support in Myth TV is integrated, then we'll probably end up putting the driver into the upstream kernel.
So basically, once the Myth devs say, okay, we got the driver working, we have it set up in our capture card setup section of the main program. Once you start it up, basically it would involve installing the driver separately and then going into the Myth TV to make sure that you know, it's capable and whatnot. Did they give you a target when they were looking to get this in? Which version is it targeted for, like 24 or after that?
They did not give me a target.
Right, so it's
I actually need to go check with them on the progress.
Yeah, that'd be great to know. You know, I tell people, you know, this
know
sounds
that,
great.
I know that.
Hold off until we know it works.
No, I can absolutely guarantee you that it's going to be in Myth TV. And I know that some of the development effort was slowed down because of IBC, which is recently which is in Amsterdam, which was, I think, like last week. And so they were doing some stuff for that they were trying to get done. But now that's over, they're back to work, I believe, back to working on this. So I need to go check on the progress, actually. So
wait, what is IBC, a conference?
Yeah, it's a conference. It's a conference over in Amsterdam for video stuff.
I guess the people that work in the industry attend. That's like an industry conference. Now let's get into the mechanics of the Infinity TV 4. What is it?
That?
Can we get into the little specifics of the actual capture card and how it works? How's it handle the different the different video streams?
So what it is there's actually four separate tuners on the Infinity TV 4. So the tuners are tuner chips, which you'd normally find on a single clear qualm tuner. You'd find one of them. We have four of them, and so we do individual tuning and demodulation for four separate video streams at the same time, and then we have a main controller chip, which does the DRM and the encryption processing, as well as the cable card processing of the four independent streams. And then from there, the video in communication gets transferred over the PCIe bus into our driver. And our driver actually exposes the card as a network device. So when you install our driver, what will end up showing up is an extra network device. So in ifconfig, you'll find a device called CTN0, which gets an IP just like any other network device. And you can run Wireshark on it and view all the traffic and everything like that. So the computer actually thinks that it's basically a gigabit Ethernet device.
So let me ask you this: then, are you running like an embedded Linux environment on this
yes,
the chip? Ah, okay. So that's interesting. Interesting. So basically, you have an embedded version of Linux running actually on the chip, and it's all self-contained within that. And I assume that you got the DRM stuff hardwired in there.
It's a combination of software and hardware accelerated.
Right. So you could probably push out a firmware update if anything changed down the line.
Yeah, we can definitely put out firmware updates for bug fixes and all that stuff. So actually currently, when we certified and released our product, the spec changes hadn't been implemented yet. And so currently, if you buy an Infinity TV, it won't work in Linux. And so the spec changes were updated and released. And so in our firmware update, we're going to be enabling the DRM-free release of content. So yeah, we definitely have firmware updates that we can do for fixing bugs and adding features and all that sorts of stuff.
So let me ask you, in your labs, do you have this working on a Linux system, being able to do like a raw capture?
To be able to do a what?
So like a raw capture, just a regular capture.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, it works. So.
Yeah. No, we've had the Linux drivers for 3 years now.
Wow.
Like I said, we're a bunch of Linux people, so we definitely have Linux support.
That's awesome. I'm really glad you guys have stepped up and done this, and it looks really promising. So
we've always wanted to support Myth TV with it, but until we were allowed to do so, you know, we couldn't do it.
So,
some of the things are just out of our control.
I understand. It's probably not easy having to deal with that, everybody to sign off on something. But look, can we get back into the specifics of the environment that you got on the card? So you, it almost sounds like it's almost like a virtualized setup where, you know, it's making itself made of, aware to the operating system that you're running it on.
So basically, I mean, you can think of it as it's a UPnP device. It shows up on the network. So the Linux host system, through our driver, basically it looks like you have two network cards, and it looks like it's a separate Ethernet network. And so our device actually acts as a DHCP server so that your host system will get an IP. And then all the interfacing goes over IP from there. And so it's from the point of view of Linux and MIPTV and all that, it's just a network device out there on the network somewhere. And so we just kind of fake the network. We don't actually have a physical network.
Interesting. Like I know when I have my my Silicon Dust HD Home Run card, which is a dual 200 QAM box, and that's a separate box that, you know, is network enabled. You know, the difference is yours is actually a card that's plugged into the system, getting the power from your computer. But right. But the idea is almost the same.
You can think of it as the same thing. You can think of the exact same thing. Our driver acts as a network interface. Our card is like the box sitting out there on the network running its own little operating system and doing its thing. There's a web page for it and everything. And then just think of, instead of an Ethernet cable, you've got a PCIe bus.
Interesting. So you have, what do you have, like a Apache or something running on there? So you can have like a web interface?
It has a web interface. It's not running Apache. It's basically just a custom little web interface that we have.
Gotcha.
Apache is a little bit bloated.
Yeah. For a better device, yeah. think of more like something like a router type setup where you go in, you pop an IP address.
I think that someone asked me the other day if we were running Tomcat, and I just laughed.
And maybe something like Lighty. Yeah, have you guys any experience with Lighty?
No, I don't.
Yeah, it's a lightweight web server, and it's similar to Apache, but it's very lightweight and it's very fast. Some people are starting to use it. I know with Lynn Hess, which is what Not Myth is called now, he switched over the Myth web interface from Apache to Lighty, and it's quite nice.
Okay. Maybe we'll look into it. Yeah, right now we just have a custom web server that we have that we wrote that runs on it and just serves up pages, so it works for our needs.
Well, what kind of things are in the web interface that you can change and look at?
Oh, all kinds of diagnostic stuff. You can see the signal level, the channel number, the SNR of the tuners. You can see what PIDs are on the channels that you're currently on, the copy protection status. You can even control the tuner from the web interface. You can type in a channel number and have it manually tune. Sometimes it's a little cumbersome to try and debug it through the actual, host software, whether it's Myth or Media Center, Windows Media Center or whatever. If you're trying to do tuner diagnostics, sometimes you want a little more fine-grained control. It has cable card diagnostics, status information. You can view the channel map. So it'll list all the frequencies that there are on your cable network, or all the channels that are on your cable network, and list the name of the channel, what frequency they're on, what program number they are, as well as their clear QAM equivalent. So, you know, on clear QAM channels, you typically have like 79.2 for a channel.
Gotcha.
In the cable card world, it's not like that. You have it. You just have whole numbers as your channels, and as I'm sure a lot of ClearQAM tuner customers will know, the cable companies can move the channels around seemingly at random at any point in time. Then you have to do a rescan, right?
Yep.
And so in the cable card, we get the channel. We download the channel map through the cable card, and that constantly gets updated. So if a channel moves with a cable card system, you don't have to rescan. There's actually no scanning involved with cable cards, and it'll just automatically update to the right place.
Yeah.
And then
With QAM cards, you know, it's a bit of a hassle to get it set up properly. You know, you get the device or the card, the PCI card, you put it in your system, you get into Myth, and you do your scan, and it goes out and it scans the different feeds coming in off the wire from the cable company, and you'll get like frequencies, you know, for the unencrypted stuff. And depending on who the carrier is, you can have anywhere between 5 or 100 open channel frequencies.
And then at any point in time, you know, you can go for a month to watching TV, and then all of a sudden the cable company will move it.
Well, let me just finish about the setup. The setup is, you have to go in your Myth setup and resolve what those frequencies are to what the actual channel that it's mapping to. Now, I know with Silicon Dust, they keep a table. They have like a dial home setup on their boxes where it'll connect back to them and it'll tell them what frequencies they are. And they actually maintain a database of what the channels are. So, and you could just pop in your zip code and put in what cable company you have, or if it's over the air.
Right.
And they'll pretty accurate and pretty up-to-date information. Even with that information, we still have to go in, you know, for me, I've done it, the easiest way to do it is to go into the MythWeb interface and, you know, you pull up the channel information page and you'll see like all the frequencies, all the QAM frequencies in there. I got to go in and say what channel that is for each one in the table. I mean, it's a hassle.
Right.
And I've only had it change once, but still it's a pain to deal with. And it sounds like with the cable card, you don't have to worry about that. And that's a huge time saver.
You don't have to worry about that. You don't have to worry about that. And it can even get better where we explicitly added this feature on our device webpage to be able to view that information so that if you have a cable card tuner and a clear QAM tuner, you can go to our device webpage and it will show you the entire list for your specific cable company. And it's up to date within 5 minutes, up to date. And so all that information's there and easily available. And it even gets better. It is possible the channel map information is available. I mean, you could get it with a program. And so someone could write an extension to the Myth TV UI to where you could just say, you know, this clear QAM tuner is on the same cable as this cable card tuner. So just automatically figure out what the frequencies are.
Yeah, that would be a great thing. Because QAM, you know, with the digital transition, it's nice. We got more channels and a lot more HD stuff coming down the pipe. But it's a hassle having to deal with the QAM. You know, with the old analog capture cards, like the Hot Pod cards, you know, you didn't need a cable box. As long as there was an analog feed, you just plug the cable in, do the scan, and you would get all your channels. And that was the end of it. You know, you connect the schedules direct, pull down your feed, it would match it automatically, and you were done. With the QAM, it's much more manual at this point. And it sounds like the cable card is much easier. And it sounds like it's pretty promising from what you describe.
Yeah, we're excited about it. Like I said, we've always wanted to do support in Myth, and now we can. So we're pretty happy about it.
Let me ask you, what does this mean for non-Linux people? What about like the Windows people? What are some of the applications that might be able to use this? Just out of curiosity's sake.
Well, like I said, any company can. It's an open interface specification, so any company or any person could go write an interface to it and receive video from our device. And so, at the moment, the only ones that are that we know of that are either working or going to be working are Windows Media Center and Myth TV. But I mean, this is a fairly recent change to the spec. So, any HDPC software could write an interface to receive content from it.
Yeah, I'm sure HTV people are probably into it too. I'm sure they'll probably do something too.
Maybe. Yeah. I mean, if they don't, they're gonna be behind the times. So.
Yeah,
I mean, it's definitely in their advantage to do it. So we'll see.
Yeah, it is. I'm really excited about this, and I'm waiting to see how this turns out. It sounds like it's really promising, and you know, everybody was pretty. You know, when the announcement came down, I think it was back in August that this change had been made regarding the cable cards. A lot of people were excited about it.
Yeah, it's definitely exciting. Now we just need to get the some of the cable companies to not put the protection flags on all of the channels.
Yeah, that's unfortunate. That really is. And the fact that it's not like a standardized thing. Now, I know back in, what was it, 2002, I think it was, when they were talking about broadcast flag.
Mm-hmm.
And that got shot down. Now, this almost sounds like it's they've decided to do something on their own, regardless of what the government legislates and follow it. It's DRM.
Well, the broadcast flag still exists, and people can use it. It's actually kind of annoying. I know, because I was actually dealing with it today. There's some stuff on some NFL football games, since it's Sunday while we're talking about this. They had the broadcast flag that I was looking at. It was kind of an annoying thing.
Yeah, the NFL people are very, very protective of their stuff.
Yes, they are.
Yeah, it's unfortunate. I mean, honestly, people are paying for their content. There is the idea of free use and fair use. You know, as long as you're not going out and turning around and selling the stuff, you should be able to copy it and share it within devices in your own household, you know?
Well, I mean, the concept of DRM is supposed to be where, you know, it happens and the user doesn't even notice that it's there. But, I mean, it's a long ways away from that happening. So, unfortunately, it's in a lot of cases, just it's very cumbersome. And just simple things from being able to, you know, move some content to your mobile device so you can watch it on the go or something. It's just not there, and it's going to be a long time until it is, unfortunately.
So, you know, with the cable card, you know, when I do a capture with the QAM, it's basically MPEG-2 coming over. And I do mostly HD, and I got some standard def stuff on there. So it would be the same thing coming over through your device, right?
Yep, MPEG-2, transfer stream.
Yeah, so if it's... Now, the actual file, the DRM is all done through your card when you're doing the capture, right? But once it's on the hard drive on the device, you're pretty much free to do whatever you want with it, right?
That's the whole concept, yeah. The flag is called copy freely. You're free to do whatever you want.
Right, so I can move it around devices. I can re-encode it to different formats.
On the Infinity TV device, we deal with the cable card and strip all of the encryption that's on from the cable wire. It's on the when you receive it. We just completely strip the encryption and give you guys an MPEG-2 TS file that's all clear, and you can do whatever you want. Re-encode it, move it anywhere you want, do whatever you want with it.
That's awesome. It's making me really excited, and I'm really excited to check it out and see, you know, try to get it integrated into my system. You know, like, I have the Silicon Dust as one of my capture devices, and for what it does, it's a great device. You know, it burns me that the cable company, you know, it's closed pretty much everything except the over-the-air stations. Like, my cable provider... Go ahead.
In the last year, all the cable companies have basically been turning on encryption on all of the channels except for the local broadcasts.
Yeah, my provider, RCN, they had, let me tell you, they did like a re-rolling out of their HG tier stuff. And before they did this rollout, I could get probably 30 HD stations unencrypted, no problem. And then they did the rollout, and they basically shut it all down except for the over-the-air. And it was really disappointing.
Yeah, a lot of the ClearQAM tuner devices that you bought previously basically just became useless when this happened. So it's unfortunate, but
the way around it is, my main capture device, I'm using the Hophog PVR-1212, and that's through the right. Component connections off the cable box, and that works also with a satellite box. Now, anything with cable card is strictly cable company we're dealing with.
Correct. Yeah, the satellite companies are. So, like I said, we have in cable, there's the FCC has mandated that, you know, the cable industry has to allow for third-party devices to be able to put in a cable card device and be able to get to channels. The satellite industry is not like that. There's no mandate for that. And then cable, we have cable labs who write specifications and they're open standards and all that so that we can do that. But satellite is completely proprietary and closed off. So it's unfortunate.
How did I get around that?
Maybe in the future.
That's what I want to know. How did I get around it?
I don't know.
They're paying off the right people.
I don't know. I mean,
they're lobbying the right people.
The cable companies. Yeah. I don't know. You think that when the FCC made the cable industry do it, that they would have, they should have moaned and said, well, how come they don't have to do it? But somehow they got out of it.
Maybe it's because there's only basically two carriers, satellite carriers. You got DirecTV
right.
and Dish Network.
There's like 1,000 cable companies in the U.S.
Maybe that's why. That's the only thing I can think of that, because it's the cable companies, there's so many different carriers out there. They want to control it and standardize it a little more.
Yeah.
And even the two satellite companies, they were talking about merging at one point, and I think that got shut down.
Well, it'd definitely be a satellite monopoly at that point.
Yeah, well, it's almost there, so. I don't know. I've had cable, I've had satellite, different points, and they're both good. Honestly, for HD right now, I think the satellites is actually better. I'm sorry, the cable company's better. The satellite, it seems, what I've seen of like DirecTV and even Dish Network, their HD streams, they seem to really compress the crap out of it, whereas the cable company doesn't seem to do it as much.
The satellite companies have a lot less bandwidth capabilities than the cable companies, and also the cable companies have a unique advantage just because of the infrastructure. If you think about it, you've got local broadcasts all across the country, right? They get inserted locally, as well as, for like video on demand and stuff like that. That all gets inserted locally. And so you can, in each individual location, they all get done in parallel and they don't block each other's bandwidth. Whereas in satellite, you've got a satellite up in space that's blanketing basically the U.S., or at least a big portion of it. I don't know how many they've got up there, but if they want to have a local broadcast, it goes everywhere. They don't. There's no local insertion to a satellite, so
they're eating up the bandwidth.
They have a lot of different. Right. So if they have to have a lot of local channels in various places, they still have to broadcast it to everywhere, and
gotcha.
So it eats up the bandwidth.
Gotcha.
And for video on demand services, if you think about it, within a cable system, you've got a neighborhood or a city on a node, not even a city. On a node that, has the VOD services, right? Whereas a satellite, you've got the country. And so if everyone's watching a different movie at different time frames and stuff, they have to stream movies to everyone. And you just can't do that. That's why actually the video on demand services for satellites, you select a movie or whatever, and then you wait for an hour for it to download, and then you watch it.
Right. It's very limited what you can do with it.
So
it's basically,
they definitely got some interesting limitations just because of the structure of the architecture of the distribution.
Right, and with HD, they're eating a lot more bandwidth than the standard F stuff.
Right.
Now let me ask you, as far as like with the digital signal, how much bandwidth are they saving compared to like the analog signals that we used to have?
So in cable, in cable, transmissions get sent out in a 6 megahertz chunk on the wire. So the cable, it starts at around 54 megahertz and goes up to about a gigahertz, right? So you've got roughly about 1,000 megahertz to do. And every 6 megahertz is a different place they can transmit in, right? So that gives you a rough idea of how much they're working with. And so with analog, each one of these 6 megahertz chunks is one channel.
Gotcha.
And so with digital, and especially with SD digital, you can get with SD, 10 or 11 channels on one 6 megahertz chunk. So they basically took all of their, if you take 1,000 divided by 6, I don't know what that is. It's like 100 and something, 130 or 140, I don't know. They basically took that 100 and something channels that was taking up their entire spectrum from analog, and since they can get 10 or 11 per 6 megahertz chunk with digital, for the SD equivalent of what analog was, They put that down to, you know, what is that, 10 chunks?
So it means that they're able to have lot more channels available.
A lot more channels. And then when you get into HD, for HD, you get about 2 or 3, depending on the compression, per 6 megahertz chunk. So, they went from analog, and assuming that they changed everything to HD, or at least the channels that were used to be analog, even at HD, they were getting 2 or 3 times more channels.
So it's a lot more that they could have.
Oh, absolutely. I actually have a blog post about Switch Digital Video that explains all this in detail and the math and why. It's basically why the cable companies are moving to Switch Digital Video and why it's useful and important. It's at multidimensionalbit.blogspot.com.
I'll check it out. Sounds interesting. It's good stuff for people to read. So let me ask you, what kind of setup do you have? What are you running in your home setup?
Well, right now I'm running an Infinity TV in a Windows Media Center box because, for obvious reasons, I want to use an Infinity TV, and the support there is not quite ready in Myth TV. So, but when that's ready, I'll definitely be setting up a Myth setup in the house. So.
Have you played around with Myth TV at all?
I have, yeah. I actually, years ago, I tried it, and it was a little bit cumbersome and difficult to set up and maintain. It's got a lot better now.
Oh, yeah, I know that. The Ubuntu guys have done a really nice job. They have, like, a central interface now where you can control everything through. It's really nice.
Yeah, so it's a lot better now. So, yeah, I've played with it and, done some clear Comtuner stuff, and I'm excited about being able to do a cable card in it. It'll be good. I'm on Comcast, so... So most of my channels, except for HBO and those things, are copy freely. So when the development's done and ready to go, I'll be able to get all the channels I watch. So
yeah, my PVR 1212 has been pretty rock solid. Since they introduced it in Myth in the last version, it's been about a year now, I guess, and that's been rock solid. In fact, I hear more people saying that it's more stable in the Linux version than in the Windows version. The only limitation with the PVR 1212 is. It's only over component out. So basically, you're getting through with the analog hole, and you're tied to a specific set-top box. So if you want to do multiple recordings at once, you're gonna have to get multiple boxes, capture cup boxes, and multiple cable boxes or satellite boxes to do the recording. Which is, so it gets expensive.
And then you've got the monthly fees for all this.
Yeah, so it adds up. It sounds like
not only do you have to buy the. I mean, I don't know how much those are. I think they're like. Are they like $199?
They were $199, but you can get them on sale for like $170, $175, $165 range.
So not. I mean, if you're trying to do a 4-tuner system, I mean, not only are you going to be paying $600-$700 for that, you also have the 4 cable box monthly fees involved too. So it definitely gets expensive.
I have to ask you a question. For someone who's running a Windows-based DVR system, do you actually have to run antivirus software on your DVR?
No.
Now, let me ask you, how long can you leave it up for, the system for?
I've had it up for a month at a time, and at that time it went down because I had to reboot or install a new firmware driver or something, not because it actually crashed or anything.
Right. So you're saying it's pretty stable. I'm just curious because I don't run any Windows stuff.
There's some stuff that with tuning adapters for Switch Digital Video that we've had some problems with in our initial release, which we've been doing bug fixes and stuff like that. And so it's a new product. It's our first product, and with anything, there's going to be some bugs. And so. We've been fixing those, and we'll be sending out a firmware update to fix those. So,
how's the file system been working for you with that? Have you had any problems with the file system? At certain points down the road.
No, I haven't had any.
What does it use? An NTFS?
Standard Windows file system. So yeah, I guess so.
That's just out of curiosity. I'm just wondering how everything works.
Yeah, I've got a 2 gigabyte. A 2 terabyte drive in mine, which I need to add more to. I know some people that run a server with a network drive and just save it to that. So.
Yeah, I heard you on the HTPC centric podcast, and it's a good interview. And those guys sounds like they get some crazy setups. My setup is pretty straightforward. I have a main myth box that's got a terabyte drive in there, and the only thing that I put on there is my recordings. So I have my main recording device is the Hoppog PVR-1212 connected to the cable box. And then as a secondary device, I have the Silicon Dust HD Home Run. And then I record the the unencrypted stuff off of there. And that setup is pretty good. You know, I've had three HD recordings going at once, and I haven't had any problems. And I've actually watched back one HD show while doing three recordings. It's not the it's not the beefiest system either.
From a recording point of view, we've actually recorded, I think, 18 shows at once, HD shows at once, in one box while watching, I think, 5 live. And one local and then 4 streaming. So
now that sounds like a commercial application, right? Like a hotel or something, right? Or school or something.
No, that was just for fun. No, yeah, we were just having fun. On my system, I've got 2 terabyte drive, and it's just completely full. I mean, I've got 4 tuners with each tuner can record something from a few hundred different channels. So the way that I use my system is I don't watch anything live, and I don't really record any one-off shows. I just, whenever I see a show that I want to, that looks cool, I'll just go set up a series recording. And so after a while, I just get tons and tons of shows recording constantly. And it fills up a 2 terabyte drive pretty quickly when they're all HD.
It sounds like you're pretty indiscriminate about it. I'm a little more surgical about what I record. I usually record stuff I only want to watch.
Yeah, I'm not. It's more of a convenience factor for me. You know, I don't want to think about it. I don't want to think about whether I can record it or not, or whether there's going to be scheduling conflicts. And, you know, if you got enough tuners, you just record whatever you want. You don't have to think about it. I got too much other stuff to do besides trying to manage my DVR, schedule recordings.
Now, let me ask you, with the Windows Media Center, do you have to, you get all the guide information through them? How does that work with that?
Yeah, Microsoft supplies the guide information for free.
So they basically give you a lifetime subscription?
There is no subscription. They just supply it. So.
What do? You just pop in zip code and your provider?
Yeah, I mean, in Windows Media Center, you go through setup for your tuners, and one of the questions is just what your zip code is. And then after that, it will ask you, it'll pop up a list of things like here I've got, when I type in my zip code, it'll ask me if I'm Comcast Seattle or Kirkland or whether it's over the air or not, stuff like that. And then you select the one to you, which I select, Kirkland Digital Cable or Comcast Digital, and it gives me the right guide information.
Gotcha. Let me ask you, back on my system, I don't have the beefiest system. I have a dual core AMD 64, 2 gigahertz processor. And that handles the 3 recordings at once pretty well. What's the minimum spec for?
It'll do 4, no problem.
What's the minimum spec, Kevin?
People keep asking me the question about minimum spec, and I don't have an answer because I've never found a minimum that it won't work on. You can't buy a computer today that it won't work on. So we did a lot of work to make the driver and the transfer and the recording stuff very resource very light on the resource usage. So it's compared to, for instance, decoding and playback of something, it's extremely small.
I guess the only limitation is what
I have an answer for a minimum.
It's basically the hard drive, how fast the hard drive is able to do the reads and writes, right?
Yeah, I mean, well, for 4 recordings, even a 5400 RPM hard drive can handle that, no problem.
And then any newer SATA drive should be able to do it without any problems, then.
Yeah. Like I said, I've never been able to answer the question of what's the minimum, because I've never found the minimum. I've tried it on Atom systems. I've tried it on you know, the lowest thing you can possibly get, and it's no problem.
Yeah, I mean, you think about what the lowest system somebody might have out there. You know, I mean, an Atom is a low powered thing, but you think about what they have, maybe a single core, maybe, you know, like an AMD single core.
A single core gigahertz. With the 512 makes RAM or something.
Yeah, maybe a gigahertz processor. You would think that's like the middle of most days. So.
I guarantee you that it'll work on that.
Right.
So, I mean, like I said, basically what's happening on the system is just copying a file. All of the hard work and the encryption and all that stuff gets done on our board. So the only thing that's happening on the actual system is just, you know, copying a file. It's basically a memory copy and then hand it off to the hard drive controller to write a file. That's it.
I want to get my hands on one now, so I'm looking forward to actually trying one and actually putting it through its paces. And I have a test box that's, I don't know, 1.8 gigahertz AMD dual core. I would love to try it and test it and see the most amount of recordings I can get going at once. But so you don't have a timeline as far as when the Myth guys might think that they get it in there.
I don't. I mean. What we did was basically, you know, we supplied them with a card, and we gave them the drivers and got them up and running so they could view some TV and manually tune the tuners on the device webpage.
We're basically at the interview. We were just talking about, you know, the MythTV developers, and you were saying that you got a card to them and they were testing it. So you have no timeline as far as when the actual card will be supported in Myth. So.
Right.
I plan on going into those the RC. Maybe I'll ask around too, see what they're doing. It's pretty exciting stuff.
Yeah, we're definitely excited about it. I know there's a lot of MythTV users that out there that are very passionate about it, and so it's going to be good to be able to supply them with a useful device. So.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to getting my hands on one and trying it out and see how it works. And
I actually have a. Question that Gadget Wisdom wanted me to answer.
Oh yeah, I know him.
Gadget Wisdom's the
guru.
MythTV, the guru. Yeah. MythTV user and there's an Android buffet.
Yep, I know that guy.
Yep. So he wanted to know what distribution of Linux I use, and I use Fedora. I've got F13 running on my system right now, and I'll probably using Mythdora when I set it up, just because I'm. You know, familiar with Fedora and the system, so it'll be easier for me to tweak things.
Yeah, my first.
I do also have an Android phone.
Oh, do you? What do you got?
I've got the Captivate or the Galaxy S from Samsung.
That's nice. It's a nice phone.
Yeah, it is.
Cool. It's pretty exciting times where we got going right now. A lot of cool things going on. Lots of fun toys to play with. My first build of Myth, I actually did it on Fedora Core 2. And I used Jared Wilson, who's one of the Mythdora leads now. He had a great write-up back in the day, and I used that. And I actually had that system running for, like, I don't know, a year and a half, just running on Fedora Core 2. And the first few couple of years, I was running Fedora. Eventually, I switched to a Debian system and then Ubuntu. But it's all good, you know. I tell people when I use Myth, try Mythbuntu, try Linhas, and also try Mythdora. Yeah, all three of those are good, and you can't go wrong with that, any of them. You know, they all have like all the little quirks and differences between them, but they're, in general, they're all pretty good.
Yeah, I started out in Linux in a Red Hat environment, so you know that's what I know. It's what I tend to stick with. So
yeah, I started off with Red Hat too, and I kind of veered off into Debian land, but. They're all good. Red Hat is solid, you know, and any of the stuff.
It's all come a long way in the last.
It's not even funny. I started running Linux in 1998 was when I started, and I remember it, and it's night and day. People have no clue.
Yes, it is. It's easy now.
Yeah, it's really easy. Anybody can do it. A 6-year-old can install a Linux system.
Yep.
It's good stuff. Well, you know, thanks for coming on. I appreciate you for taking the time to talk to us.
Yeah, it was fun.
And, you know, you'd be welcome back anytime. I'd love to get an update down the road once, maybe when, maybe it gets into the MTV testing branch and you know, things are a little closer to general use. And
sounds good.
And you'll have to send us a couple of test cards our way so that we can put it through the paces and do a good review for it. That would be awesome if you could swing that. But I know you can't make any promises. But thanks for coming on. I appreciate it. And we'll talk to you real soon.
Sounds good.
Have a good night.
You too. Bye.
Take care. Bye.
What I needed you to say was hidden far away.